From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life.
I'm Pete Stoughton.
And I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
Whether your mental or physical wellness brings you to the top of the highest peaks,
or you need a little help with the climb,
The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch.
Pete Stoughton is out today on a very well-deserved family vacation. Well, according to the CDC, in the United States, high blood pressure occurs in one in every 12 to 17 pregnancies among women ages 20 to 44. And it's also on the rise. My guest this morning is Dr. Tanya Bodnar. She's an OBGYN at Intermountain Park City Hospital. She joins me to talk about this and also how during the pandemic, some women have put off routine well women health checkups, health screenings, and mammograms. She says it's really important to continue those. So if you've put off some of those visits or screenings, it's time to get in, make an appointment, especially if you're pregnant. The sooner you have information about your condition, the better the outcomes will be. Dr. Tanya Bodnar, welcome to The Mountain Life. It's great to have you.
Good morning, Lynn. It's so wonderful to be with you again. Thank you so much for this invitation.
Certainly. It's always great to talk to you. You're so passionate about women and their health care, and especially during pregnancy. So let's start here. Why would high blood pressure among pregnant women be on the rise?
Well, as you were just saying, according to the CDC, about half of Americans have high blood pressure, and many of them don't even know it. That's why it is known as a silent killer. And if you are pregnant and you have high blood pressure, you may not even know that you have it. So there are definitely some steps that we can take to manage it, to firstly diagnose it and make sure that you are healthy, that your pregnancy is healthy, and that we have a good outcome. But this leads to sort of the broader picture that you brought up, that during this pandemic, everything has been sort of put on pause for a little bit of time. And we've noticed that some women have been a little bit slower, a little bit more cautious to come in to do their routine well women visits, their checkups. There have also been some concerns and delays in getting breast screening or mammograms, and we have seen more of a trend towards delay in prenatal care just because of these concerns about safety and worry about really what COVID-19 is all about and how we're handling and managing it all.
Interesting and yet understandable. I think most of us have sort of put off those, going into the hospital or, even the ER if we need something, unless it's, very highly emergency related. But
right.
I'm wondering, what is the minimum number of prenatal visits that a pregnant woman needs?
Right. So every woman and every pregnancy is different, and we don't have sort of a perfect number of how many visits that should be. Some of these will include ultrasounds early on if you are higher risk, some routine ultrasounds like the level 2 or anatomy ultrasound where we assess all of the parts of the baby and the placenta. And then closer to full term, you are seen a little bit more often to just continue to check your health, your baby's health, and some of these sort of findings like high blood pressure can pop up or show up or reveal themselves a little bit later on. We call this gestational hypertension, which is when blood pressure just shows up towards the end of pregnancy, but is not necessarily an underlying condition. Some of the things that we have changed and some of the additional protocols that we've implemented have been changing some appointments around to make some of them virtual. Mm-hmm. So we are still seeing, and this relates to prenatal care, but also sort of all facets of women's health care. We can still do appointments virtually, either through the phone as we're talking now, or we can see each other on the computer screen and be able to have a nice visit without our masks on, which can be refreshing. And we're still making sure that we address all of everybody's concerns and questions and reviewing lab results and making plans going forward. So some of that the care maybe has changed with regards to how we're doing it, but the access is definitely the same. We are still available. We're still present. We're still so happy to see everybody.
Mm. Well, it's been interesting during the pandemic, the number of medical providers that either, you know, want to do it largely virtually, and there are some who, for no reason, it seems, don't want to do that at all. I'm wondering if, you know, if there's, say, a pregnant woman who has high blood pressure, can she get a blood pressure cuff, take her blood pressure while she's, you know, Zooming with you or FaceTiming, whatever you do? And, you know, to what degree can you do sort of home assessment, or can the patient do home assessment while you're on the, you know, online with them?
Sure, Lynn, that's a great question. A lot of people worry about that. Some patients do worry that doing some virtual visits, they're going to miss some things. And I think early on, even some providers had some nerves about getting in front of a computer screen. And I think now we're a good year into this, and we've sort of worked out all those nooks and crannies and all the confusing parts of the technology. But there certainly is a role for virtual, and there is a role for in-person visits, and we don't dissuade people from coming in if they really feel like they need to, or if we feel like they need to be coming in, we encourage that as well. It's just one added sort of safety measure that we have put in to decrease our patients and our own risk for what's been going on in the pandemic. But to specifically answer your question, there, Intermountain has had a big push on being able to offer blood pressure cuffs for women during the pandemic so that they can be measuring them remotely. They can be watching them at home. When we do see patients at the beginning of their prenatal care, they are seen here in the office, and we can make some diagnoses for what we call chronic hypertension, women who have an underlying blood pressure problem that may not have known that. And that is typically found out during one of the first few prenatal visits that we do here in the office. And if we have seen that, we will likely want to do further tests. We will like to see you more often. We will have our raters sort of up knowing that that is something that we are already dealing with that we're managing and that we're watching very closely. So there certainly is a role for doing that, but we will tell our patients that need to be seen a little bit more frequently that we're happy to see them here in the office, and that we would encourage some of those virtual appointments to actually be changed to in-office appointments.
If you're just joining me on The Mountain Life, my guest is Dr. Tanya Bodnar of Intermountain Park City Hospital. She's an OBGYN. And Tanya, I just wanted to know, your practice there, it seems to have grown, expanded. You have many doctors now. I don't know, just like 10 years ago, it was a very small practice. Can you talk a little bit about the number of doctors and, you know, physician's assistants and nurse practitioners that you have within your group?
Thank you, Lynn. That's a great question. We are, as you said, an OBGYN, so obstetrics and gynecology clinic within the Park City Specialty Clinic, and this is inside of Park City Hospital. We as a group are four physician providers, and we offer all spectrum of women's health services. And, you know, the hospital is a little over 10 years old. I think we're going on our 12th year, and it has slowly started to grow and expand, and especially in this last year, Park City as a community has really grown. We have had so many amazing people come in from other parts of the country, from other parts of the world, and our services have definitely expanded based on the need. So we are welcoming all of our new community members, our neighbors, to come in and to get their whatever kind of care they need. So their routine well women visits, their checkups, talks about contraception, procedures for contraception, and also are any concerns that they may have, any kind of bleeding issues, any kinds of hormonal questions. So we're encouraging everybody to go ahead and give us a buzz and come on in for appointments or to see us virtually so that we can make sure that we can keep our women healthy and strong as our Park City community grows.
When I moved to Park City, there was never a chance that you could deliver a baby here in Park City. But I'm wondering, what are your numbers now on delivering babies at Intermountain Park City Hospital?
Our numbers are good and our numbers are growing, and we are happy to say that we are pulling in from all surrounding communities and neighborhoods. And I don't have the exact number because I feel like we are seeing more new OB patients every day, but we're definitely pushing between 300 and 400 deliveries a year, and it's super exciting to be able to be part of this new growth in the community.
Yes. Now, it seems like I was out there one day and there was a funny noise or some kind of bell or something that came over the loudspeaker, and someone said to me, oh, it's because a baby was just born. Is there something like that, or did I make that up?
No, that's exactly right. And it's so wonderful to have that sort of interrupt us in a very friendly and wonderful and magical way. There is a chime that the hospital rings, and it's a sort of sweet little abridged version of a lullaby. And it rings over the whole hospital and into patients' rooms to let us know when a baby is born. So it is a nice way to know that good things are happening in the world when everything else is a little bit chaotic and crazy. And it is a reminder that we are doing good things here in this hospital.
Oh, it just made me so happy when I heard that. And I think it would be that way for anyone, really, who's at the hospital and they hear that, especially when they know what it is. So thank you for
for sure. I think, you know, there's a lot of hurt and there's a lot of healing and there's a lot going on in a hospital. And it's nice to remember that there is some nice, positive things that are happening here as well.
That's right. Can we talk briefly about mammogram screening? This is something that people have also put off during the pandemic. And when they finally do make their appointment and the provider tells them when they were last in, they're probably kind of surprised that it's been, you know, 2 years or whatever. But talk a little bit about your services. I know there's the, you know, so a handful of years ago, they started doing screening that's this 3D model, and you have that there at the hospital, right?
Correct. So mammogram screening or breast cancer screening is still definitely recommended. Again, when everything was sort of on pause and hold and we were trying to figure out what this whole COVID-19 thing was all about, we did stop offering that service for a very short amount of time. And since then, we've implemented all sorts of additional protocols and aggressive cleaning and sanitizing. And I can say, even from personal experience, getting my own mammogram, what a wonderful service it is. The technicians downstairs in our radiology department are really top-notch. They are kind and lovely and warm, and it can be a stressful time to, you know, have your breasts squeezed and put in a machine and be nervous about what this outcome could be. So I think we're doing a really excellent job, and kudos to our team downstairs who is making this happen. So I think something that you were alluding to is that there might be some changes in the recommendation of mammogram screening, and we are doing such an amazing job nationwide, but especially here in Utah, and even more especially in Summit County with vaccination. But the one sort of caveat to that is that we have noticed some changes in breast imaging immediately after receiving your vaccination, your COVID vaccine. So we are asking a very slight delay or interval between receiving your vaccine and getting your mammogram done. So either plan on getting your mammogram prior to your vaccine, or when you call to schedule, the patient service representatives should be asking you the appropriate questions, and they will indicate whether you should be waiting, you know, about 4 to 6 weeks after receiving your vaccine to then get your breast imaging done. So that is sort of the reason why there's a little bit of an interval change that we are recommending now.
And why is that?
So they've noticed some non-specific changes. Some radiologists have seen some enlarged lymph nodes or some inflammation within the breast tissue, and this has been attributed to the vaccine just because of the changes that are occurring after vaccination. So waiting just a little bit of time, and that all sort of comes back down again and your breast tissue looks more normal. This was leading to extra imaging and a little bit of extra anxiety for patients and some false positives. So we have seen now through the research and through the experience that our radiologists have that just waiting a touch of time, just a few weeks, sort of brings you back down to your baseline, to your normal. And this should not alter any diagnosis really that needs to be given if there really is something there to catch.
That is very interesting. And they don't know why it is that it creates something that looks like more dense tissue or...
Yeah, just some non-specific inflammatory changes is really what they're noticing and some changes within the lymph nodes as well. But that all comes back down after a little bit of time.
Right. Okay. I did want to mention one really wonderful aspect of the screening process is that they have warm robes. That just really makes an impression on me.
I agree. As a patient, I thought that was such a nice touch to just have, you know, almost like a little spa-like feeling before you are a little bit more exposed and, you know, have something that's not always the most comfortable procedure, even though it is so important and so quick and so worth it. But, Lynn, I agree. I thought that was just a really, really nice touch when I was given a nice warm robe to put on.
Yes, especially for those of us who don't stay in really nice hotels or don't frequent spas or anything. You know, that is our one spa experience, the warm robe at the mammogram place.
I love it. I love it. Thanks for encouraging people to get their little spa mammogram.
Right. I wanted to go back to hypertension.
Thank you.
There are some, I mean, I guess I'm a little shocked at the focus on this, that it is so prevalent. I had no idea. And what you say is, I mean, there are obvious risk factors for high blood pressure that we all may know about, and you can go into these. But also, super fit, healthy young women can also have hypertension.
Yeah, so I think that's what can throw us off a little bit, and that's why we think, right, and I try to pretend that I'm the super fit, healthy young woman as well, but it's not going to happen to me. This is something that only affects people with, you know, more risk factors, and I'll go into a little list that I have for that. But it can affect anybody, and that's why it's so important to be coming in, and everything can be fine, and blood pressures can be normal, and then out of the blue, you'll come in for a visit, and I'll pop in, and I'll go, hey, what's been going on? Did you just run up the stairs, or did you have an extra cup of coffee? Because your blood pressure is just a little bit off, and as we do some more tests and we do a couple of extra things, we notice that this is something, a new diagnosis that is happening specifically in pregnancy. We call this gestational hypertension, and it brings its own sort of risks for pregnancy and for the baby as well. So some of the risk factors that we may all think about or know are such as obesity, decreased physical activity, women who smoke or drink alcohol, having diabetes, whether it's type 1 or having gestational diabetes, which is just diabetes in pregnancy, can also increase your risk for high blood pressure. Women who have autoimmune disease or some women who need assistive reproductive technology, such as IVF, if you're having multiples like twins or triplets, this can all increase your risk for high blood pressure. And I think those few things that I just mentioned are a little bit more obvious, but also women who are having their first pregnancy are at an increased risk for high blood pressure in pregnancy, and women who are particularly young for their first pregnancy, and women of advanced maternal age. And I say that with a lot of love and sensitivity because I think a lot of our population up here in Park City actually does fall into this category, and those are women who are over the age of 35.
Okay. Boy, over the age of 35, it still sounds so young, but I know I've had friends who are pregnant over the age of 35, and there's some word for them which makes them sound like they're really old, which, as we know,
correct.
They're not at all. But.
Correct. So there's geriatric pregnancy, which I personally don't like, and I like to lean more towards saying advanced maternal age. And again, I say it with love and sensitivity because I had one of my pregnancies as an advanced maternal age mom too, and I didn't necessarily feel like I was old or geriatric, but just with a little bit of advanced age come increased risk factors for some potential problems in pregnancy, one of which is hypertension. So just knowing that is there, we know that is a possibility, and that's why we're watching our gals a little bit more closely.
Yeah, that's nice. I was going to say, without any context at all, if I heard the term geriatric pregnancy, I would think, since when do 70-year-olds get pregnant?
Right. I know.
So I like how you changed the term. That's much, much better lexicon there. I wanted to ask you, for all of us, not just pregnant women, how has technology and innovation helped us to monitor our own things like our blood pressure? You mentioned the blood pressure cuff, which is something that we all recognize throughout the ages, the cuff that wraps around your arm and you pump it up. But, you know, can your Apple Watch or something else, you know, some really easy bit of technology make that easier and more immediate for you to monitor?
Right. It seems like, or at least here in our local community, everybody has their watches, everybody has some sort of a heart rate monitor, checking our Stravas and our different ways to sort of monitor our exercise levels. I am unaware of an actual blood pressure reader aside from one of my favorite words in medicine, a sphygmomanometer, which is the blood pressure cuff that goes around your arm. But women are always watching their heart rate and trying to make sure that we are keeping that sort of under specific numbers, that they're not too high, that we're actually getting some exercise, that it's coming up a little bit, it's not too low. I think technology has definitely changed over the years for sure, but still coming in for visits and sort of monitoring symptoms can also help with detecting if something is off. We are our best diagnosing person. We know our bodies well, and we know when something is off and when something feels different, and then reaching out to physicians and providers and people that we trust to then sort of ask those questions and say, hey, I need a checkup. I need to come in and make sure that everything is okay, which is just another plug-in for well women visits and regular annual care.
Dr. Tanya Bodnar is my guest this morning. And Dr. Bodnar, we have just a couple minutes left. And I know that a big focus of yours, an area that you really enjoy, is seeing young patients, so teenage girls who are maybe coming in for the first time. Can you talk a little bit about why this is so important?
Yes, Lynn, I didn't even think we were going to touch on that today, but I so appreciate you bringing it up. I think it is so important to really listen to our young women, to really empower our young women to take good care of themselves, to advocate for themselves and for their health. And it is super refreshing and one of my passions to see our younger patients here in the office, either mom who is bringing them in, sometimes dad is bringing them in, or other family members, like aunts or grandparents, and we have really open, candid conversations. We talk about what's going on in life, what's going on in school, stress. We talk about contraception, if that is important and necessary to them at that moment, or whether that's something that could be important in their near future. We talk about how things change when they go off to college, and potentially they're not sort of home with other people watching them and telling them what to do every minute, and knowing that they have a voice, they can speak up for themselves, that they should speak up for themselves. And I also like to remind them that they have myself as their gynecologist, and that they have a primary care provider that they can call and ask all sorts of questions. Nothing is embarrassing, nothing is wrong, nothing should be out of the realm of what they can call and ask and talk to us about. So I like having that communication and that relationship early on so that they feel like they always have advocates for them, not just themselves. And it is so wonderful to see our young women sort of walk through life as they come in for their first visit, and then later on they're going through higher education. When they meet their partner for life, they're getting married, they're having babies, they're moving on. It is sort of one of the really beautiful and wonderful things that I get to do, and to see women through these changes.
Dr. Bodner, what is the most well-used or the preferred method of birth control these days for young people?
Right. So I think historically we were all used to, and maybe I'm talking just out of personal experience, but remember always being, you know, sort of put on the pill. Let's just put people on the pill.
And
with that comes a little bit of a compliance issue or a compliance concern, meaning it's hard to remember to take a birth control pill every single day at the same time, especially our young community now is so busy. They're off from one sport to another sport, extracurricular activities, this, that, the other. So sometimes that is not the best way. So very recently, the American Academy of Pediatrics or pediatricians has really recommended a form of long-acting yet reversible contraception as the first-line method. And we're talking about intrauterine devices, better known as IUDs, or implants that go in the arm, something like a Nexplanon, because once these forms of contraception are placed or the procedure is done inside the office, then patients or young gals really don't need to worry about taking something else again, right? So this can help for contraception, for birth control, unwanted pregnancy, and a lot of times these forms of contraception can also work or help for non-hormonal benefits. So if women are having difficulties with periods that are irregular or heavy or painful, so there's really added benefit to both.
Great. And finally, I wanted to ask you about STDs among our young population. What is the most prevalent STD these days?
Right. So we definitely see the whole gamut everywhere nationwide and in Park City. It is important to know that any STD is a possibility, and I tell that to all my patients, my young patients, especially if they haven't yet become sexually active, because I want them to understand that it can happen to anybody. What we're seeing nationwide and sort of globally is that the human papillomavirus is the most prevalent. And I know that the last time I was on here with you, Lynn, we spoke about HPV, we spoke about the Gardasil vaccine, how the recommendations for vaccination had also changed. This was back in 2018. And we are really encouraging all of our patients up through the age of 45. So not only are young teenagers to be vaccinated, but all of our patients who have not received the Gardasil vaccine, which is what prevents against the human papillomavirus, HPV virus, to be vaccinated up through the age of 45. This can cause changes in your pap smear, and it can ultimately lead to cervical cancer if it goes undetected and untreated. So this is an important one out there that doesn't necessarily give signs or symptoms, but it's something that we screen for and we check when you're coming in for your visits, and it's something that we can prevent.
Dr. Tanya Bodner, Intermountain Park City Hospital, it's been a pleasure speaking with you again, and thanks for being so informative. These are great things for everyone to know, so thanks for joining me.
Lynn, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for asking about so many important things right now. I feel like we could keep talking for hours, but it's lovely to speak with you, and I hope to see you back out and about soon.
Yes, you will. All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Mountain Life.
If you enjoyed the show, make sure you subscribe, rate us, and leave us a comment.
If you have an idea for a future show, email us at mountainlife@kpcw.org.
We hope you'll bring your green smoothie and join us next week for The Mountain Life.